Hi gang, this is Scooter, and thanks for joining me here at Fish Toes. I know it has been pretty sporadic since I have been on. It's been quite a while since I've put any updates on here. And, you know, life happens, and this is just something I kind of do for fun. So, I apologize if anybody's been interested in the stuff I've been listening to. And again, don't hesitate to shoot me an email or send me a voice chat on here if you have some particular questions and stuff. So I do want to do a little kind of refresher on what my podcast is all about. And that's really getting people interested in fishing and being able to go out and do a good enough job to enjoy yourself. You know, fishing is supposed to be, you know, for the most part anyways, not counting competitive type stuff, relaxing. It's a way to get out. You know, it's just sort of an enjoyable hobby. Some of you like to fish to get something to eat, you know, and that can make it a little more stressful too if that's really what you're looking forward to, putting food on the table. But for the most part, what I'm catering to is just getting out, enjoying some of nature, you know, getting the kids out fishing, anything like that. So in line with that, something I didn't really talk about is, you could probably call it course fishing. Now, course fishing is a term that's kind of from Europe, and that's what they refer when you're going after fish that aren't target fish for for eating or some other type of usefulness to the fish. It's basically going after fish that aren't really you're not really going after them to eat them, things like that. So, but they can be a blast to go out and catch. And I'm referring to things like carp, actually I shouldn't say catfish. People and catfish is quite tasty, but you know, sucker fish, you know, things like that, that people don't really target a lot in the States. Carp is one that a fair amount of people target because they're a blast. This spring I was fishing at Lake Racetown in kind of central PA, and I happened to get there. Wasn't planned or anything like that, but when I got there with the family, I get down to the water and the carp are just pounding up on the shorelines because it's spawning season. I don't know a lot about the biology and so forth of carp, but you know, they're coming up on the shorelines, and I've seen this happen a lot. And they're you look in the water and you see a 9-pound, 2-foot carp just pounding into the shorelines and stuff, and they're spawning and stuff. And exactly how or what that dynamic is, I don't know, but I'll have to look it up at some point and let you guys know. But that part's kind of irrelevant right now. But if you go to any of your local fairly still waters, lakes and stuff like that, you're almost always going to find carp. And carp are a blast to catch because they get really big. They fight pretty well. They're not dangerous. They don't have teeth or anything like that. And they're a pretty easy to fish for fish. So they can be a lot of fun. And so, and there's a lot of other ones, you know, suckers, other bottom feeders and stuff like that. They taste like mud, so nobody really wants to eat them, but they're still really fun to catch if that's kind of your thing. And I enjoy doing that from time to time. So I wanted to kind of talk about some of the simpler fishing, because if you're new to it, you kind of want to get into some things that make it easy and, you know, still be able to be kind of productive. Because, you know, if you go fishing all the time and you don't catch any fish, you're going to get tired of fishing. So what do we need to do to get you onto some fish? Now, for the most part, no matter how bad you are at fishing, if you go to a lake and you fish around a dock, you're going to catch some bluegills and sunfish, you know, some regular little panfish, probably the odd bass or two, and that's great. But, and speaking of that, just keep in mind, when you're catching those panfish, again, depending on the water, there's places where they don't really have many predators. You'll fish a small pond or something like that, and there's no bass in the area or no bass in that lake altogether. So that's fairly rare. There's usually always something that's going to eat bluegills or any kind of panfish. So always keep that in mind. If you're fishing right off a dock and you're catching a lot of small bluegills, if you're there in the right time of day, there's a good chance that bass are going to move into that area to feed on those fish. So don't be afraid to cast out a little bit farther and bring it back in, because that's where the bigger fish will tend to be, is, you know, somewhere where they can be out beyond those fish and come in and feed and then go back somewhere where they feel safe. So if you're fishing off a dock, you know, and you got a ton of bluegill around, chances are the bass aren't right there, or else the bluegill wouldn't be there. You know, they're going to flee, you know, from the bass. So the bass have a tendency to stay out of the area where they know the small fish are, and then they just kind of dart in, scoop up fish, and then go back out. And they move around a lot, so you're probably only going to catch them there at a certain times of day. You know, again, right after sunrise and right around sunset are typically always pretty productive times. And, you know, there's so many variables when it comes to the water and what's going on under the water, structures and things like that, for me to be able to narrow it down to you. Though I do want to focus on that at some point, you know, kind of talk about, you know, if you see, you know, if you're fishing off a dock and you've got a weedy area where you can see, you know, this time of year, the water's usually fairly clear. You know, you're still seeing a lot of weeds in the water. Those bass can hang out in those weeds. And then if all the bluegill and stuff are right around the dock, or wherever you're, maybe a fishing pier or something like that, if you can see the bluegill and stuff in the water, there's a good chance that sometimes during the day there's going to be some bigger predators out there. So always keep that in mind when we're talking about fishing for smaller fish. I don't really want to lump panfish into the coarse fish, because panfish are pretty good eating. I don't typically eat them, but they're a good fish. You got to catch a lot of them. And you want a decent size, or else you're just fighting, you know, you're filleting fish to get one bite. You're going to get tired of that pretty quick. So, you know, depending on where I'm fishing, I've been fishing in some lakes and stuff, and some ponds, some rivers and streams where the bluegill population gets pretty darn big. And I, you know, every once in a while I will keep a couple if I'm catching some nice, you know, 7-8 inch panfish. You know, the one particular private, again, just a little private pond that's about 3 acres. I mean, I've caught them pushing, you know, 10, 11, even 12 inches long. I mean, they'd hardly fit in a pan. So, you know, they're bigger than, you know, they're much bigger than your hand. So, you know, you get into this ones like those, you know, they get too big like anything else. They're not as good eating because they tend to get older and a little tougher. But, you know, you get them, you get the ones that are about the size of your hand or a little bit bigger. You get enough of them and learn how to fillet them properly. Then, you know, you can make a pretty good meal pretty quickly out of them. So, carp is probably the biggest one that I fish for that is considered a coarse fish. You know, you're not wanting to eat them. I mean, people used to all the time. You know, they'd grind them up with meal and make basically like salmon cakes, but out of carp. So, you know, it's like anything else. You season them up, right? I'm sure you can eat them. Just not a lot of people do. They're a pretty bony fish too. So, you know, they're a little pain in the butt to work with. But in any event, so when we're talking about fishing for something like carp, they're bottom feeders. So if you look, when you catch any fish, if you look at the structure of the fish, how it's built and what it's designed to do, it's not hard to figure that out when you look at a fish. So when you look at a carp, you're going to see that its eyes are forward and kind of down farther on its head, and then its mouth is on the bottom. Well, that's not a mouth, and it's like a sucker almost. You know, it's got kind of mushy lips and it's on the bottom, so they go along and basically suck up stuff off the bottom. So I'm not saying you can't, but you're not going to catch many carp with something that's up off the bottom very far. You know, they'll swim up off the bottom if something's floating along and grab it, but they're not cruising the top of the water looking for food. If you see them swimming around, and you might, they're not typically feeding. They're typically going to be on the bottom. Now, a great time to catch them right up on the shoreline is if it's been dry or whatever and the water level was down or whatever, and then when it comes back up, even if the water level's up and it rained a lot and the water level's higher and a little murky, okay, you know, clear water, they I don't know what their eyesight's actually like. I'll have to look that up, but as far as I know, they have pretty decent eyesight. So they're a skittish fish, and when the water's real clear, they seem to tend to avoid that. But when it's murky, they start moving around a lot more. And what happens is, you know, you get like grass along the bank and stuff. So when the water goes up a little bit, all of a sudden these carp can come in. And they forage, they eat the grass, they'll eat it, they eat a lot of plants basically. They're not you know, they'll eat something that's dead laying on the bottom, but that's not really what they go after. They go after more, you know, vegetable type stuff. You know, they'll eat something dead laying on the bottom, but that's not the normal circumstance for them. So you can catch them with worms and stuff. But some other really good baits for them are corn, marshmallows, sweet stuff I find works pretty good. And then another product you can buy or you can make yourself are called boilies. And they're just basically a round dough ball. And when they're boiled, the outside kind of becomes, like a shell almost around a bread center, if you will. And usually that'll make them float. And then they're flavored and colored. And so what happens is you put them on a hook and they'll float just a couple of inches off the bottom. And, you know, as the carp swim by, and carp have really good sense of smell, for lack of a better term. And so they can hone in on those. Boilies are huge over in, like, Europe and stuff like that. They're not as big here, but they're definitely around. And if you go into the store, you'll find all different kinds of carp baits. Stuff that's almost like, reminds me of the styrofoam, you know, marshmallow peanuts you buy, you know, at fairs and stuff like that, if you know what I'm talking about. It's kind of spongy material, usually floats, and they're usually sweet, scented, all kinds of stuff. I've never hit on one that was like, oh, this one works way better than anything else. I mean, for the most part, it seems like you make any of them. And I used to make them all the time by basically making bread dough and mixing more sugar in with it. And sometimes you add something else, a little anise is a really good one, that licorice kind of flavor, because that really permeates the water. You know, you could add almost anything, and you can make them easily out of usually stuff you have around the house. And then you just roll it into a small ball, drop it in the water, boiling water, and cook them for a few minutes until the outside gets a pretty good texture. And then, so now you've got boilies there. Again, you can buy them. They're not usually very expensive. And you can put them on different kinds of rigs. Carp do have a tendency to be pretty skittish, so you do want to have a leader that's a little bit thinner line. Not something that they can see real easily, because they're kind of slow, timid fish. They come up and they'll pull this boilie in, but if they see some line moving around them or something, that could spook them off. You know, so if you're fishing in muddier waters and stuff like that, having a fishing line that's clear or green, that kind of blends in, and not like 30-pound test where it's really thick in diameter, something lighter. But again, carp get pretty big, so you probably don't want to go less than 10 pounds. With your fishing line and your leader. But you could fish, like I usually, when I go for carp, I usually fish with 15-pound test, and then I use 10 or 12-pound leader. And so what I typically will do is I usually tie my own hooks, because the hooks I use for carp tend to be smaller and more round, kind of like an octopus hook. You can buy like hair rigs, all these different kinds of hooks. We're not going to get into all that boring stuff right now. But the only reason I do the octopus hook is they seem to, they kind of fit the boilie a little bit better. And when the fish pulls them in, they're kind of rounded and smooth. So I feel like, you know, maybe they're not picking up as much. I could be completely full of crap, but, I've seen to have more luck using a more rounded hook. So I use those kinds of hooks. Again, I'm probably using something a size 6 or so. If I'm seeing a lot of big carp, I might go to a size 4. You know, I rarely go much smaller than a size 6. And remember, again, with hooks, for the most part, the rule is the bigger the number, the smaller the hook. So like a size 12 hook, which I might use for trout, is a really small hook. That's a little small for carp, but you can use that. The hardest thing with carp fishing when it comes to the hook size is if you have a really small hook and they pull that boilie or whatever, corn, whatever you're using for bait, little marshmallows, they pull that in and you know, they're staying in one spot. And again, you're fishing on the bottom, so you can't see it. Till they start to swim away, they might have already swallowed the bait. And that's no good, because then they swallowed the hook. And so if you've got a little bit bigger hook, they can't swallow it as easy. There's a good chance once they've got it in their mouth, they'll kind of detect it, start to swim off, and that's when you see that your line's moving and you can set the hook. We'll go into that part here shortly. So again, I'm fishing with, say, 15-pound test. If they're bigger carp, if you're in an area and you know they're not real big, you can definitely downgrade that. You don't need that heavy a line. You can do, 8 or 10 pound test and still catch. The last time I was out, I didn't realize the carp were going to be hitting that much. So I had only came for bass and I was using 10 pound test, and we caught a couple of them that were 2 foot and right around 9 or 10 pounds. That's on 10 pound test. So you can certainly catch them on that. You just want to make sure your drag's set good, because they'll fight you pretty good. So what I usually do is, I try not to have anything too metallic close to where my hook is. And again, the reason for that is if it's shiny and it's, glinting and under the water, they're pretty timid. So I try not to do that. But I usually put on a snap swivel, a treble swivel, which is basically a little swivel that has three eyes on different ends. So you can tie your main line to one end. And then I'll tie a short line with like an egg sinker. So like a sinker that's shaped like an egg that has a little eye on it. And that I keep close. And then you can tie on maybe about 1.5 to 2 foot leader with your hook on the end of it. Now, if you're trying to keep things simple, buy yourself a snap swivel, put that on the end of your line, hook an egg sinker on the snap swivel, and then put your hook with your snelled hook, which has a leader already on it, on there. It's not the best setup, but it'll definitely get you moving along. Then when you cast it out, your sinker will go to the bottom, and that boilie, if you have a bait that's going to float a little bit, will float, however long your leader is on your hook. So it might be 6 to 8 inches, give or take. Now, I say I tie on a leader that might be 2 foot long or so, because usually the boilies still don't have enough to pull that whole thing up. If they do, like if I'm fishing for a while and I'm not getting any bites, I'll shorten up my leader to drop my line down lower so that the boilie stays closer to the bottom of the lake. So that's a really simple setup to use for carp. The other nice thing is if you do have a couple of fishing rods, it's a nice relaxing way to fish. You can cast a couple out. Check your local regulations. Most of the places I fish allow you to have up to 3 fishing rods, lines in the water as long as you're near them. But they don't let you, you can't have like 10 fishing rods out. But again, that's going to be depend on your local regulation. So you kind of want to check that out. But I usually have 2 or 3 lines out. If I'm getting a lot of bites, I might only have 1 or 2 out just because they're hitting a lot. You go out, set it down. They make all kinds of really cool things, but a simple stick with a Y in it, you push it in the ground, set your rod in there, let your rod set down, make sure your line's pretty snug. You cast out, let it sink to the bottom, set your rod down, and then reel it in just a little bit until your line is not all curled up or laying real slack. You want it to be a pretty straight line down to where your bait is, even though you can't see it. So that way, if a fish is ticking on that and moving it around a little bit, you'll see the end of your rod twitch a little bit. That's what you're looking for. So then you just watch it. Now with carp, you can watch it for a little bit, and if it just keeps tick, tick, ticking, you can wait a little bit and try giving the rod a little flick and see if you can set the hook. Or you can wait a little bit longer, and if the fish starts to swim and move, then you want to try and set the hook. And there's all different philosophies behind that. Usually what I do is I watch and I see the ticking. Now, if I see ticking continuous, I'll give it a quick twist. If I'm watching and it tick, tick, ticks, and all of a sudden my line goes slack, well, that means the fish could have grabbed the bait, but he's swimming towards me. So my line went slack, so I reel in a little bit and then try and set the hook. And again, carp are a lot of fun to catch and stuff like that. You'll catch other fish doing the same thing. Though if you're using boilies, I can't think that I've really caught anything too much besides carp and some suckers and maybe a rare catfish when using boilies. Now, if I use corn, I've got all kinds of stuff on corn, but I don't seem to do quite as well overall. I might go out and catch 6 to 8 carp on boilies. And if I use corn, I might catch 2 carp and 2 catfish and maybe a bluegill or something. So I'm catching a bigger variety, but I don't seem to do as well overall. But again, that's going to depend on your local water. So it's fun to try out. So if you've listened to the beginner's you know, guide to picking up your gear and stuff like that. So if you've got all your fishing stuff, you've pretty much got everything you already need to get into fishing for the carp and stuff like that. So a lot of times if I go out and it starts raining or it's overcast and there's not a lot of light in the water, you know, anywhere I fish, that seems to really get the carp and catfish, for that matter, moving around a lot more than on like a bright sunny day that's calm. You know, and those are fun days to be out fishing, you know, more so than like a rainy or kind of dreary day. But if you wanted to, if you go out and, you know, you want to just try something different, you want to just be able to sit back and relax and put your feet up, put a few rods in the water, this kind of fishing can be really good. Now, if you're fishing in the right place, you know, you could cast a line or two out a ways and then take a third line and put a bobber on it and catch some bluegill and some other stuff, you know, with some bait, you know, closer to the top, you know, having fun so you can watch your bobber and keep an eye on the end of the line. One fun trick, carp are usually really good to catch at night. Again, they don't like the bright days, so when we have a lot of bright days, the carp tend to go a little more nocturnal. They are moving and feeding at night because the visibility is less and they're not as worried about predators and things like that, because, you know, it's the same theory we have. If I can't see them, they can't see me. And it's true to a certain extent, but there you have it. So nighttime fishing for carp and catfish is a great practice. And one little trick you can do at nighttime. Now, they do make stands to put your rods in, and they actually have little like buzzers on them, so that if the rod starts to twitch, it's a little, when you set it in there, it's like this little lever or this little fin you stick, and it sets on your line, and if the line starts to vibrate, it picks that up and it starts to like buzz or whistle kind of quietly, so you know you've got something going on. I don't have one of those. I've never used one. I don't really know that I care that much. But what I do at night is I usually have a little lantern or something with me, and I take a little couple pieces of aluminum foil. And then once I cast out, my rod set down, I'm waiting. And it's a waiting game with carp. You know, you might sit there for an hour with three rods out and nothing, and then all of a sudden all three of them hit, but you never know. What I do is I take the foil then, and I wrap it just around the end eye on my rod, and I just make sure it's sort of angled towards me so it picks up and it reflects the lantern light at me, and then I can see it. Now, they do make line that is fluorescent, I guess, like a fluorescent blue or yellow, and you can use a black light, and then you can see your line really well, and that lets you see if the end of the rod's moving or if your line's moving around or goes slack or something. So there's some fun little options like that for fishing at night. Make sure you take your bug spray. You know, if you haven't been on a lake at nighttime, bugs are pretty bad usually. In you know, in the middle of summer, you get some big nasty guys that are flying around out there. You know, I've never been attacked by any of those kinds of things, but you know, you get some kind of big I don't even know what they're called, actually, but you know, there's all kinds of big predator bugs that are out there, and they look pretty scary, and you know, they fly around and whack into you or something like that, and you think you're being attacked. So you know, keep an eye out for those. I usually do most of my night fishing in the spring or fall, even though summer is a better time to do it. But in any event, so the foil, little foil trick on the end is a really nice little simple way to do that. Back to the baits, we talked about boilies. I mean, you can use worms, but they're not great for carp, but you could still catch carp on them, and you can always catch the odd catfish. Anything that's swimming around the bottom that picks up the scent of the worm, you know, you can usually pick them up. You know, certainly caught plenty of bass that way. So that's a few of the things on there, about that. I'm drawing a blank over something else I said I'd come back to and talk about. Let's talk about some rigs and stuff. So I talked about a really basic rig. There are a lot of other different ones. They make what they call, I think they call them like stands or stand-ups or stick-ups. And what they are, it's kind of like a little mini bobber. But it's a tube. It's a long tube. But what you can do is you can actually attach it right where your sinker is, and then put a bait on there, and that tube, when it goes down and your sinker sets on the bottom, that tube will stand upright. And then that also helps keep your bait off the bottom. So if you're using like a worm or something like that, there's some other rigs that let you do little slip bobbers and stuff. They're really kind of hard to explain, but effectively it's like putting a little mini bobber on your line that You know, you can adjust where it's at on your line so that, you know, your sinker would go to the bottom. The bobber pulls the line. The bobber goes after the sinker, like closer to the bait. And then that holds your bait up off the bottom a little bit. Because, again, with most fish, now, again, if you're targeting the carp and catfish or anything, you pretty much want to be right on the bottom. Now, I do recommend if you're fishing like this, if you're casting out and you're not getting bites, move around a little bit. If you cast it out pretty far, you know, you could put a bit of heavier weight on there. It's always possible that you cast out and your bait dropped down in between some rocks and nothing's getting to it. You know, so don't hesitate to let it sit for 10 or 15 minutes, you know, cast your other lines out or whatever you want to do, and then, you know, reel it in, just not much, just a couple of cranks, enough to move your bait around a little bit, because it might not be sitting in a good area. Now, as you get into later summer, you're going to notice when you're reeling in, there's a good chance you're going to hit some weeds and stuff growing on the bottom. That can be fine. They move around through that as much, but it's also harder for them to find your bait if it's buried in a bunch of weeds. So you sort of got to be careful, you know. I look for, like, I cast out, and as I bring it in, you know, like, you can feel if you, again, you know, I did a whole episode on kind of paying attention to what's going on. So if you reel in and you're kind of feeling like there's some soft resistance, and then a bunch of resistance, and then soft resistance, and then you're probably coming through a weed bed. And that can be really good, but if you're fishing from a bank, it's kind of hard to map that. So, like, if you cast out as far as you can and you hit weeds, and then you reel in five or six times and all of a sudden you don't feel the weeds anymore, don't be afraid to cast it out. And as soon as you do, reel it in five or six times and then let it drop and be right on the edge of that weed bed. You know, it's, again, it's hard to know you're right there, but, you know, that's the kind of stuff you want to play around with and figure out, like, okay, am I on a weed bed? You know, let's say you cast out as far as you can and you reel in and you can feel hard taps, like you're bouncing across rocks. Okay, then that's good. And then you reel it in halfway and you're hitting, then you feel like you're hitting weeds. That can be good too. But then cast out and then reel back in not quite halfway and try and get something set up right on the edge of that weed bed. You know, while you're sitting there and you're casting lines out, pay attention what direction you're casting and how far. And if you're feeling like, you know, if you're facing straight at the lake and you cast at 12 o'clock straight in front of you and you feel weeds the whole way, but when you cast out at 2 o'clock, you're not feeling anything, you know, just dragging across the bottom, cast at 1 o'clock. Are you feeling weeds? Not feeling weeds? You know, work your way back to 12 o'clock until you feel the weeds, and then you're kind of figuring where the edge of that weed line is, and then cast just outside of it. You know, reel in a little bit so you can see if you can feel them or not. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff you got to sort of get a little bit of intuition about and a little bit of knowledge about what you're feeling under the water and kind of put a picture together in your head of what's going on. Especially if, you know, like when I was younger, I used to go to the same four or five spots and fish them all the time. So when I went and sat down, I knew right where I wanted to cast because, hey, it's dark out now, but I know there's a big rock in this river right out there, and right past that rock is where I want to be. So I'm learning the lay of the land, if you will, underwater, just by a lot of trial and error. But then you learn, and, you know, you can make notes if that seems like, you know, if that's your thing, or if you just kind of remember that stuff and want to try it out, that's great. So those are some really fun ways to fish, and hopefully this is helping you out a little bit about getting an idea on where to go and stuff, you know, and where the carp are laying. The carp will scour the bottom. You know, they're going to suck up algae and lots of little water bugs and stuff like that. And, you know, that's what they forage on. So, you know, you just kind of need to get there. You know, if you're from Central PA, or you know where Lake Racetown is, if you go to the Seven Points Marina there, there's a big kind of cove. Like if you were standing on the docks at the marina, the cove's on your left. And if you go down there almost any time of year and any time of day, you can look in the water and just see the carp everywhere, almost any time of the year, and any time of day, though usually in the hottest part of the day you don't see them too much because they move to cooler, deeper water. But they're there. And if you see that, you'll see that it's just a bunch of slightly algae-covered rocks. There's not really a lot of other stuff going on. But it could be a really fun place to fish if you're going for carp. You know, if you throw a bobber in there, you might not catch much of anything. And you throw some lures around, you might not catch much of anything. But if you start fishing for carp, you know, you can have a pretty fun day there. Again, in the clear water of a hot day, I've never done very well, but I've done pretty good if I fish in the morning or evening or even overnight. In fact, that used to be one of our favorite things. We'd camp down there, and once it got dark, you know, we'd sit around the campfire, make mountain pies, then we'd all walk down to the lake's edge and cast lines out, and we'd sit around, tell stories and stuff, and just watch our fishing lines, see if we'd get something. And that was always a lot of fun. Don't write off fishing for some fun fish, because most places you go, carp are going to be some of the biggest fish in the water. I used to fish a small pond that was probably a little over a half acre, and they had put in, I think they were called silver carp, I don't remember, but when it would rain, they would come up to the top and swim around, and these things look like missiles, you know, torpedoes in the water. They were 3.5-4 feet long, and it was like it's like seeing a puddle in your yard, and there's a, you know, a foot-long fish swimming around in it. You know, they looked massive. We could never catch them. Never caught one. We tried everything we possibly could throw at them. Never caught one once. But we'd see them swimming around, and they were 3 feet long. They were just massive. So we always had fun trying. But there was a lot of good bass and bluegill in that pond, so we still always had a lot of fun. Just never caught the real big carp in there. You know, most of the carp that are around the States, at least where I'm at, are what they call common carp or grass carp. I don't even know if they're actually grass carp. I'm thinking they're pretty much what they consider common carp, but there's mirror carp. I can't remember which are the big carp that are in the Mississippi that jump out and hit people. But if you ever watch any videos, I would not want it to happen to me, but it's still kind of funny to watch. And, you know, I want to say those were mirror carp or the silver carp, but I can't remember which one off the top of my head. But I guess something with the boat motors makes them jump up out of the water, and people are cruising down, the river, Mississippi River, at high speeds, and these fish jump out of the water in front of the boat, and then, of course, the boat slams into them. It's pretty wild. If you get a chance, just type in Mississippi River carp or something like that on YouTube, and you can probably see a pile of the videos. So it's pretty funny. Or, well, I don't know. I mean, you don't like seeing the fish get hurt, but they are an invasive species there. They're not supposed to be there. So that's a bad thing. In any event, there's a lot of people that bow fish for them just to get rid of them. And a lot of people catch them and stuff. But in any event, like I said, don't write off fishing for, you know, we kind of call them junk fish or garbage fish here. Fishing in small streams, you can catch big sucker fish, which sort of are a good bit like carp. They're bottom feeders. You know, now they eat anything that's on the bottom. So, you know, if you fish right on the bottom and they're there, summertime, you can see them just laying in the streams and rivers, and usually in like little groups. So there's that. Get out there and enjoy some of that fishing, because it is fun. You know, if you're just out to relax, catch a few fish, not necessarily put on the table, go after them. They're a blast. They're usually, you know, can get pretty darn big. I'm not even sure what the biggest carp I've ever caught was. Nothing like 3 foot, but I'm sure probably around 30 inches, 2.5 feet, over the years, and probably 15 pounds or so. You get out at the right times. They're a lot of fun to catch, and I hope you enjoy it. So hopefully this helps you out with them. I do want to talk about one other quick thing. And that is summertime fishing. My summer got busy, but I did get out a couple of times. I took the fly rod a couple of times, and I took my spinning gear a couple of times. One thing that I forgot about, because I really haven't done it in years, and that is, you know, you go to a stream that's got, or a river that has, some bass in it, largemouth or smallmouth. Usually, a lot of times, at least around where I fish, when you're in the rivers, it's more smallmouth than largemouth. And you get all kinds of other little fish, creek chubs, and all these things. But it's kind of fun to, you know, throw on an old pair of sneakers and a pair of shorts, walk out into the river halfway, and just start casting out and bringing in. Now, you can fish with real small lures. You could put a worm on and let it float downstream, or a little bobber, and you'll catch all kinds of stuff. I went out, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago. This is late August. Right now, it's September 22nd. I was letting some worms float downstream. I caught 7 fish in about an hour, and every single one was a different type of fish. And that's fun to me. Like that, I just think that's pretty cool. I walked out in the water. It didn't look great. The whole thing looks like it's about a foot deep, but there's some bigger rocks. The river was down because it was late August. We hadn't gotten rain in a while, you know, and you cast out and you bring it past some rocks, and all of a sudden a little smallmouth just darts out. When I say small, it was probably 6 inches. It was not a very big smallmouth bass, but it was fun. You know, I was using real ultralight tackle. And then 2 casts later, I caught another one. It might have been a bluegill. I can't remember what it was in the second cast. Not even remember, but it was, there were a creek chub, a fall fish, one sucker fish, smallmouth, a bluegill, and a rock bass. I hadn't caught a rock bass in a while. They're a lot of fun, especially like in August and stuff. That's when they tend to be about at their biggest. They're not very big fish. They're the size of panfish or even a little smaller, but they fight like little devils for all the bigger they are. So when you walk out and you see, like, if you've got a river nearby, if you know there's fish in there, don't get me wrong, you got like something that's got a lot of acid mine drainage and you know there's no fish in there, don't fish it. But in the summertime, you can look out and see like water, and it's, you know, it's a fairly wide river, but it's shallow. I guarantee you there are fish all over the place. They're not big fish, typically. I mean, you'll find some big ones laying around, but, don't pass up just because you see this big kind of flat, shallow part of the river. It's easy to walk out in, and you can have a lot of fun, and you can catch bigger fish in the deeper spots. Because the same time of year, we used to always go into the Juniata River below Lake Racetown. And in fact, there's a bridge that's down a little ways down past the lake where we would always go in. So we'd walk along the edge of the water and catch crayfish. And if they were small, you'd put them on hole. If they were big, you'd break that. You'd break the tail off and just use the meat out of the tail and put it on the hook. And then there were spots where it would drop down to 5 or 6 feet deep. Well, we'd wade way out, and we'd be in the water up to our chest. You're just wearing a T-shirt and a pair of shorts and flip-flops or something. Just something, you know, I'd usually use old sneakers because you get a little better purchase on the bottom. And then throw that line out and just find different spots. And you find the right spots, you could pull smallmouth bass. Smallmouth seemed to love those crayfish. And we'd pull them out left and right. Nothing huge, 12, 13 inch. Still a lot of fun. And you'd be standing in the water on a hot day, and it's nice and cool and refreshing. All this kind of bank fishing and stuff. I know you watch TV and all this stuff, and everybody's fishing in boats. Boats are great. Boats are a great way to fish. There is no doubt that boats are a very productive way to get around. It's convenient because all your lures are there, your rods are there. It's great. But fishing from the bank or in the water, pair of hip waders, all that kind of stuff, don't think that that's a bad way to fish. It can be absolutely fantastic. Don't just write that stuff off. You know, if people are like, oh, you know, I'm not going to fish unless I can be on a boat, you're missing out on a lot of great fishing. I've had boats. I've fished with people that have owned boats, so I could get out a lot. I enjoy that. Don't get me wrong. I mean, if somebody says you've got the option to bank fish or fish on a boat this day, I'm going to go on the boat most likely. But there is nothing wrong with bank fishing and going for it. Just set your goals to meet what you're doing. You know, I don't have to go out and catch giant fish and a pile of fish every time I go. I go to places that I know fishing is tough. But I'm excited if I catch a fish or two because I know it's hard to catch them there. you know, and I try different things. I experiment, I play around. And, you know, that's, to me, that's part of the fun of fishing. Just enjoying, you know, being out, trying new things and seeing what works. You know, I know people that use crazy things and it works for them because they know they've just tried, messed around, did a lot of different things. And, you know, they found things that work. And I love that kind of stuff. So if you've done stuff like that and you've got, like, something that works for you and you don't mind sharing it with us, let me know. Because I'm fascinated by what people fish, how people fish, different lures, different jigs, all that kind of stuff. I love it. Like, that's that. You know, like, I'm a gear nut, okay? Like, I have a ton of equipment, and I don't need it to have a good time. And most of the time when I go out, I don't take a lot of stuff with me. Unless I'm fishing newer water, I have a tendency to take more than I should. But at the end of the day, like, you know, I love to have... When I learn a water pretty good, I can usually go out and only take 5 or 6 lures with me, or whatever it is I'm fishing with, or maybe I'm bait fishing. I don't do that a ton anymore, but, you know, I might take bait, or I might take some bait and a couple lures, and then, you know, but as I learn what each area, what lures work in what time of year, how deep the fish are, you know, all that stuff adds up. You know, it makes a lot of, you know, good background for you. And you know, a lure that works in one water may not work as well in the other, but it probably will work pretty good. One thing I've learned over the years is lures aren't the be-all, end-all. Like, it's not, if somebody says, I've got the perfect lure to use in this water, it's not. I guarantee you, you can catch as many fish on something else. What tends to happen is people use a particular lure a lot to where they get comfortable with it and know how to fish it extremely well. It's usually the action, the depth, it's other things that make the difference, not so much the particular lure or the particular color. Now, colors do factor in, but for the most part, if you've got, like, I always look at it 4 colors. I like to have a white, I like to have a red, I like to have a chartreuse, and I like to have something that's pretty dark. Now, it might be a dark green, it might be a dark red, it might be a dark brown, like a motor oil or something like that. So I like to have a little bit of variation in color because water clarity and things like that all do add up. I also like to make sure I've got a lure that's either noisy or some that are a little more quiet, because those things factor in. And for the most part, you can fish something, and it's like, if fish are really keyed in on something, if the water's muddy and their visibility is bad, having something bright works, or having something noisy can work. If the water's really clear, you know, again, having something dark or having something that's bright might be an option. Again, it's they're all a little over the place. You know, but it seems like every time I fish, I'll fish a particular lure one day and bang them up. And then I go out the next day and they don't seem to hit on that. Now, is that because they're not hitting on it, or is it because I'm not fishing it the same? And I'll switch up lures and then all of a sudden they're hitting on this. So I start looking around. Okay, what's different about the water clarity today? You know, usually the water temperature is not going to change a lot, you know, but the outside weather, is it sunny? Is it cloudy? Is it rainy? Is the water murky? Is it clear? You know, and those are kind of the main things you're focused in on. And then that's going to basically put you down to a particular set of lures that you're going to learn to use. And so if you're going to go out fishing in the morning and you look at the weather and it's like, hey, the weather's great today, no clouds. Well, I might throw one or two things in there that I normally use on a cloudy day, which might be something brighter or something a little noisier. And then, but I'm going to be planning, so I'm going to take a couple things that are, you know, what I would normally use on, say, a clear day, and I know the water I'm going to is water that's typically always clear, so I can plan for that. But I always throw one or two extras in there as a contingency in case, oh, I forgot, it rained last week, so the water's a little muddier than I thought it was going to be. So that's... Those are the things you focus on. The particular lure is not as critical as you know, if somebody's like, well, I use a Smithwick Rattling Rogue, which I love those, by the way, in a chrome blue. Well, most likely, if I'm in a particular situation where I've got one that's all chrome and doesn't have any blue on it, I'm probably not missing too many fish because it doesn't have blue. You know, or whatever. Now, I will tell you that, and there are places I fish, Glendale, if anybody's, again, from Central PA, there's Glendale Lake. For some reason, when I fish lures with blue on them there, I seem to just do much better. You know, now that water is always a little bit murkier, so I always take stuff that's kind of chromey with a little blue on it, and that seems to work. I could throw on something that's chrome with black on it, just doesn't do as well. Maybe it's the I haven't fished it in a few years now, and when I was younger it was fairly sporadic I fished it, but it seemed like every time I was there I had one particular lure, in fact, which was a little jointed Rapal. It was a pretty small one, but for whatever reason that particular lure seemed to do really well there. But I also was very confident with it there because the first few times I went I caught a lot of fish there with it. And so when you're confident with a lure and you understand how it works and you're good at fishing that particular lure with just the right timing on the twitches and things like that, that's the stuff that makes the difference. If I probably started there with one that was yellow, but I fished it with the same amount of determination and the same confidence in it that I fished it the same way, I probably would have done just as well and then continued to have done just as well. But here I am sitting there telling you, hey, a blue lure always works there. And then you take a blue lure there and you're like, hey, you know, that scooter guy is full of crap. And that's not probably what it is, you know. So having somebody tell you that a particular lure, a particular bait always works, it's usually how they're fishing it and what days they're fishing on. You know, there's other factors in there. You know, when I started going to Canada fishing, I use these bubblegum flukes up there. So a fluke is like a rubber fish, okay? And you can zip them through the water pretty quick and you just twitch and dart and it looks like a fish it darts and then dies and then darts and then dies. And that's the look. That's how I fished them in Racetown, and I always did pretty good in August. And so that's when I started fishing them, and I took them to Canada. And, you know, the guides up there kind of chuckled at me. They're like, nah, we've tried them up here and they don't do any good. First day I took them out, I hammered them. And then all the guides up there kind of wanted to use them. And I don't think it really had anything to do with, like, I wasn't some great fisherman. I didn't know the water there. I just fished them how I knew I fished them at home. I had confidence in what I was doing. I was twitching them, working them well, and it worked for me. Another one of the guys that goes up with us fishes these top waters. He had somebody tell him these top waters were great, take it up. We take them up and the guides are like, top water's never great unless it's really early or late in the evening when the fish are towards the top. He fishes it almost nonstop, all day, every day up there, and he's one of the most productive fishermen up there. They just pound the crap out of it. And if you catch any fish on topwater lures, it's an absolute blast because these fish come barreling out of the water, grabbing at the bait, and it's exciting. So it's pretty fun. So don't always take what people are telling you. Even me. You know, I can only tell you some of my stories and what I use and what I do. The best thing I can ever tell you is to get out there and try different things and see what works for you. No matter how much you do and fish, you know, I was fishing last summer. There was four or five kids that came camping with us, and I took them down, and I'm putting lures on, and I'm like, you know, we tried some worms and stuff, but it wasn't working really well. So I'm putting lures on. One of the girls hit a nice bass right away. So of course, then all the kids want to try lures. So I'm putting on stuff I think works, and they're throwing them out, and I'm watching them, and it looks like they're fishing just like I'm telling them to, but nobody's catching anything. So I'm like, well, hang on a second. Or they would switch up and I would pick up a rod they just had, throw it out there and reel it in the way I was explaining to them, and I'm hitting fish. And I'm like, it can't just be like I'm lucky. Maybe I am to a certain extent, but I don't think they were fishing it exactly like I thought they were, or maybe I did a bad job of explaining it to them. You know, but it's like when I throw out there, in my mind, I'm going to catch a fish, you know, so I want to make sure that presentation is perfect every time. Not every time, and that's why I don't catch fish all the time. But most of the time, I'm pretty good on. And it's funny, when you're really paying attention, you're really working that lure, or you're really setting up your rig with the worm on it so that you can't see the hook, and the bobber depth is just right. You know, it's those little things, they make a huge difference. Sorry I kind of got off on a tangent here. But get out there, experiment. Don't take everything I tell you as gospel. You know, you fish your water, try things. You know, if you want to get out there and catch fish, throw a worm on a bobber and throw it out there and let it sit and watch the bobber, and you can have some fun. But then while you're doing that, there's nothing holding you back from tying a lure on or some other kind of bait on another rod and putting it out there and fishing and experiment. You never know what you're going to get. And that's the fun and exciting part about it. And just remember what you're doing, how you're fishing it, what the color was, what the weather was like that day. Make a note if you have to. But it's just a lot of fun. So get out there, everybody. Get your lines wet and enjoy yourselves. Please send me some messages, whatever. Let me know if you're doing something cool, whatever it is. So until next time, tight lines. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for joining me here at Fish Toes. Again, if you want to shoot me an email, it is Scooter. You know what? I'm sorry, people. I've been telling you that, and I don't have that email anymore. So I got to tell you what my new email is. But send me one on here. I think it's scooterfishtoes@gmail.com. That is actually correct. So it's scooterfishtoes@gmail.com. And hopefully I hear something from you. We can address some more things. But I will try not to be quite so sporadic on my next one. So take care, and thanks for listening.